Recently, the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service withdrew its proposal to list the wolverine, despite a small population in the continental U.S., as part of the Endangered Species Act. Now, Cascadia Wildlands and several other conservation groups are threatening to sue over that decision. Nick Cady from Cascadia joins us this morning. Good morning, Nick.
Hello, good morning.
My first question, I think, for people who are maybe unaware of the wolverine and the habitat here in the continental U.S. and maybe some misconceptions about wolverines. Could you give us a little bit of a broad overview of this animal?
Sure. The wolverine is a very hardy, it's a very solitary creature, very large home range. It's a member of the weasel family biologically, but it generally exists in high elevation alpine areas and relies upon spring and early summer snowpacks for dens to rear its young. And it generally exists, you know, throughout Alaska and Canada and in higher elevation places, but also in Oregon, eastern Oregon, eastern Washington, Utah, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and other, kind of in the Rockies and in the Cascades as well.
You mentioned Alaska and Canada, and I know there's other Arctic areas like Siberia and Scandinavia. What are the populations like in these areas?
So the populations in Alaska and Canada and in Siberia are relatively healthy for wolverines. The concern for their populations is more the southern range of the species, which used to be throughout the United States, throughout the continental United States, and that kind of historic range for the species is largely disappearing. And the main, you know, the main cause of that has been determined in climate change. And so a lot of spring snowpack is not lasting as long, and it's not providing habitat, breeding habitat for the wolverine. We see this, you know, at some of our ski resorts for the past years have not been doing very good in Oregon. I think kind of indicative of the same problem for wolverines.
The decision, both sides have looked at the scientific evidence available and come to very different conclusions about this. Can you speak about that?
Right. So our lawsuit is basically going to allege, we filed a notice of intent to file a lawsuit, so we haven't actually filed the complaint and there's no official action yet. We're hoping the Fish and Wildlife Service reverses course for this decision and giving it time to do so. But basically, there's a standard in the Endangered Species Act that the agency, the Fish and Wildlife Service, has to apply the best available science. And so what we're alleging is that the agency selectively chose science that was provided, science and data that was provided by fish and game agencies of Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. Those three agencies submitted, I wouldn't call it scientific reports because it was not peer-reviewed. It was just basically public comments from these agencies on the proposal. Those comments were kept confidential. They were not released to the public. And based on these comments, solely alone, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided not to list the wolverine. This goes against all the recommendations, unanimous approval and recommendation by the Fish and Wildlife Service's own scientists and an independent review panel that the wolverine be listed. There are only an estimated 250 wolverines in the whole entire continental United States, so the population is very small to begin with.
Do you believe that this decision is more political than scientific?
Absolutely. That is absolutely what drove this decision. It was we're seeing this with a number of different predator species, wolves and grizzly bears. A lot of states that have basically a high agricultural pressure, high big lobbies in the state governments have really pushed hard to have these species not protected. And I think that's what drove the decision here.
So is this more of a state initiative or a federal, even though, I mean, the ultimate decision here was federal, but state governments that are actually lobbying?
State governments, yes, they're actually lobbying. It's state fish and wildlife agencies that are lobbying, and representatives, federal representatives from these states that are lobbying against having these species listed.
And is it a development interest that's pushing this on the other side?
I'm sorry.
Is it like development interests, you know, whether it's mining or timber harvest or whatever that's driving
sure,
this?
I, I think this is more of the kind of hunting and agricultural community as opposed to mining and development. Certain timber and road construction activities and certainly mining activities, if it was within wolverine habitat, will affect the species. They're very, the wolverine prefers a large amount of interior habitat that's unaffected by human presence. They have a huge home range. They're very solitary creatures, and they'll move away from human activity, and they've generally been pushed out of their range by a lot of kind of backcountry development industrial activities. But the main factor here is just this loss of breeding habitat from climate change, and that's very, very problematic for the species.
The wolverines that are here on the southern edge, do they have the capability to move further north, or is this a problem of population? You mentioned there's only roughly 250 of them. Are there too few of them to successfully migrate to a more northern, colder climate?
No. I think the population here is enough to kind of spread and into different areas. I think the concern here is that we have a ton of historic range for the species across the United States, and most of this habitat will be great for decades to come, and wolverines can use this habitat. Climate change is completely wiping out available habitat for the species. What's really concerning is that these populations are becoming increasingly isolated and increasingly affected by human activities such as, you know, timber, road construction. Trapping is a big factor. We only have 3 wolverines in Oregon, and one of them was accidentally trapped by a hunter. Luckily, this hunter checked his trap within 24 hours on the wolverine, and they released it unharmed. But, you know, if we lost one of 3, it could be very problematic for the state. Basically, what is seeking to do the Fish and Wildlife Service through a recovery plan would hope to unite these kind of genetically isolated populations that are in pockets all across the Rockies and Cascades. Right now in Oregon, we have a population on Mount Hood, or a single individual, perhaps a breeding pair on Mount Hood, one in the Wallalas in northeastern Oregon, and another suspected pair in Crater Lake National Park.
We're speaking with Nick Cadia of Cascadia Wildlands. Recently, the federal government, the Fish and Wildlife Service, made a decision not to put the wolverine on the endangered species list. If you have a question for Nick, you can give us a call here at 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Assuming this would be reversed, how do you go about enforcing the endangered species, the listing of that? How would the wolverines be protected?
I think there are numerous mechanisms to protect the wolverine. The first would be a prevention of taking of the species. So state game agencies right now have kind of insisted that they're adequately protecting the species by just banning wolverine trapping. And so that's problematic because wolverines get trapped and traps set for other predators as well. They're, you know, very aggressive. They're a wide-ranging species. They can cover tons of miles in a day looking for food. And so I think one of the easy ways to prevent harm to the species when you have so few individuals out there is to just regulate trapping for big predator species in site-specific areas where they know the wolverines are. So in the Wallalas, there could be certain seasonal trapping restrictions that would prevent, you know, unnecessary harm to the species that would be very easy to implement. Mm. And those are the types of just little practical changes that a listing under the Endangered Species Act would certainly have.
Carter is on the line from Wolf Creek with a comment about wolverines. Go ahead, Carter.
Yeah, I've a question and some comments. The question is, what's the hard number of wolverines in North America continent?
On the North American continent, the entire population?
Yeah, you said 250 for the U.S.
Yeah, 250 for the continental U.S. So that does not include Alaska?
No, I'm talking, you said that already. Now, what's the number for the North American continent?
You know what, they're not entirely sure. This is a very hard species to document population of. They've done certain models. I can't tell you right now exactly how many they think are out there, but I imagine it's probably over 1,000 individuals.
Carter? Okay, about 1,000 individuals out there, at least. I looked online at a couple studies that, and I don't know how accurate these are. Some of them, like you say, seem to conflict quite a bit. But one of them suggested there may be 12,000 to 15,000 in Canada. I don't know if that sounds like it might be accurate to you, Nick.
That's probably right. I haven't looked at how many individuals are in Canada and Alaska total.
We recently had one show up in Utah. I guess they caught it on camera. Are these species, you mentioned that they can travel a long distance. What is a typical range for a wolverine?
You know, that's the incredible thing about this species. It's very territorial, and so wolverines will generally not allow another pair of wolverines within its home range, and that can be several hundred miles. They range incredibly far looking for food and will keep other wolverines out of their territory. And so we've had wolverines recently move into areas of Utah and Wyoming where they previously had not been for many years. And so that was somewhat encouraging news for the species that they're starting to disperse out into areas where they've formerly been and have not been in a long time. And so that's somewhat encouraging news, but the fact is we're relying upon the survival of a single species for a whole area or a whole kind of mountain range, which is incredibly problematic, especially when states are allowing trapping activities and snowmobiling activities and other things that could really just kill one of the members of the species and in that dispersal, in that recovery very quickly.
Wolverines are often portrayed as being mean, a threat to humans and other predators. Is that a bad rap for the wolverine?
I think it is a bad rap. I mean, they're obviously associated with numerous sports teams as well, and known as a very aggressive creature. And it is, but it's mainly a member of the weasel family. It is a carnivore, but it's basically a scavenger. And it is known for its reputation. It will scare off much bigger animals and much bigger predators away from kind of the remains of killed animals, and that's kind of why it's got its reputation and notorious for. But the chance of you encountering one in the wild is incredibly rare, and I believe it would steer way clear of you before you even had a chance of witnessing one.
You talked about climate change as an issue for the wolverine today, but previously they covered a broader section of the continental U.S. What were the pressures that caused them to shrink in size and move just into this area?
One of the big pressures that's kind of driven them out based on their kind of territorialness has been kind of development of certain areas. And so you've had kind of timber activities, winter recreation activities, kind of land development, you know, highway construction, has really kind of forced them into kind of limited pockets and limited areas that have become isolated from one another. You know, a major impact of the species based on their need for large areas of interior habitat is road construction. And that can be associated with any number of activities, and something that a lot of recovery efforts could be based on, a lot of road removal in areas where roads are no longer being used or they were just created for temporary timber harvest purposes. A lot of interior habitat can be restored very quickly by just kind of grading up some of these roads that are kind of just isolated and not serving any purpose and just costing maintenance money at this point.
This brings up some questions, I suppose, about ecosystems, and Ryan and Eugene is on the line to talk about that. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, good morning. Yeah, I kind of have two. One question is just getting a better picture of how wolverines fit, you know, into the ecosystem. I mean, obviously, they're a scavenger/predator. They're sort of an upper-tier animal, and I think that we've lost so many examples of animals like that. So if you could just talk about that, that would be great. But the other piece is just this idea of corridors, you know, of how do we think about development in a way that allows there to be, you know, habitat corridors, you know. That, anyway, so two questions.
All right. Thank you, sure. Ryan.
The habitat corridors brings up a very interesting point. And we've seen with a lot of dispersing predator species, we've seen kind of in action habitat corridors working across the United States. And it's been kind of an exercise in us having faith that this was going to work, because very rarely are you having these predator species collared. And, you know, one of the things cited by the Fish and Wildlife Service in their decision not to list this lack of they were like, oh, well, we don't have a lot of experimental data on the species because wolverines are incredibly hard to kind of trap and collar. They will rip collars off. They're a very hardy species. It's next to impossible to get experimental data from the species. But what we've seen with other species that are easier to collar, like wolves, for example, they've used kind of large, intact wilderness roadless areas to move across the state. And we've seen this particularly in Oregon. We had, a wolf species move from the Wallawas, a single individual wolf, and it followed an exact track of wilderness, national forest, and roadless areas down to California. And so with the wolverine now, with it scattered kind of in these isolated populations across the state, the idea of kind of maintaining somewhat some connections and passages over highways is very critically important.
Do they maintain their place in the ecosystem? How do they maintain that balance?
Right. So as with many other predator species that have largely disappeared from the continental United States landscape, they play an incredibly important role. And what we've seen is a lot of ungulate species have become very overpopulated. Deer and elk have become massive problems all across the United States. And this is due to this incredible disappearance of predators. You no longer have, generally predators will hunt near riparian areas where ungulates will go to drink and eat. And so we've seen widespread destruction of riverside habitat that is now starting to come back with wolves recovering, with bears recovering, and with wolverines coming back on the landscape as well. All these predators have an effect on the way ungulates behave, and what we've seen is ecosystems changing based on this behavior, and it's very encouraging. The biggest test study for this has been in Yellowstone, where wolves were first reintroduced, and we were able to see kind of a complete resurgence in not only riparian, riverside vegetation, but in songbirds and the fish population. It's been a pretty incredible recovery story.
Joining us is Nick Cady of Cascadia Wildlands. Recently, the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service withdrew a proposal to list the wolverine as an endangered species. Cascadia and several other conservation groups are threatening to sue over that particular decision. If you have a question or comment regarding the wolverine and its place in the ecosystem, you can give us a call here at 1-800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or you can send us an email jx@jeffnet.org. Nick, is there anything that between your organizations that are joining together on this and the federal government, is there any kind of mediation that you can do, or could the wolverine be listed as threatened? Would that offer enough protection?
Well, that's what we were initially anticipating, and I think initially that's what the Fish and Wildlife Service's scientists recommended, was a threatened listing. And so initially, that's what all of our organization thought was going to come. But by giving this 60-day notice to the Fish and Wildlife Service, we are opening up a mediation period, opening up a dialogue with the federal agency. And certainly, we'll have many discussions before an actual lawsuit is filed on if we can bridge our differences and what we can do to ensure protections for this species.
In terms of how this is executed, is there much difference between a species that's listed as threatened and one that's endangered?
There are a few differences. The prohibition on killing the species, on harming the species, it's defined as take under the Endangered Species Act. That is the same for threatened and endangered species. But when a species is listed as threatened, the Fish and Wildlife Service is given more flexibility to allow certain activities that may affect the wolverine, but in a relatively minor way. They can allow those activities to proceed. And because the wolverine has large home ranges, this is what we're going to anticipate to see, because obviously certain activities are going to need to continue that, may affect the creature in a relatively minor way. So that's probably practically will be the outcome if we prevail on if the species does get listed.
This is perhaps a naive question on my part. I don't know how the species operates too much, but would it be possible to go to a place like Alaska and pick up a few wolverines carefully and transport them to the southern reaches? Would that sort of thing work, or are wolverines grumpy about that kind of thing?
I'm sure they would probably be grumpy about that thing, but there are provisions in the Endangered Species Act that allow for translocation or relocation of a species. I'm not familiar with that being used with wolverines. I know a number of them have been raised in captivity across Europe and in other places, but generally what we're seeking to do is there's a relatively stable population. It is slightly expanding in the continental United States. So what we'd like to see is just some basic habitat protections, some basic prohibitions on taking the species in place and allow them to kind of naturally repopulate certain areas where they historically have been can return to.
I guess one final question that I had was in their ecosystem here, are there food challenges for them because of encroaching civilization or climate change?
You know, food challenges is not one of the threats to the species. With ungulate populations the way they are, food is readily available for the species. The main inhibitor here is their ability to breed and the loss of breeding habitat. That's been the main impact on the species.
You said they need about 5 months, and because of less snowpack, that's actually shortened now, hasn't it?
Yes, yep.
All right. Joining us today has been Nick Cady. He is with Cascade Wildlands. Been talking about the wolverine and its protection status. Nick, where can they go for more information?
You can go to www.cascwild.org, and we have plenty of information, background information on the species. You can see our official notice and press release on this topic. And we're headquartered in Eugene. Anyone is free to hop in and ask us any questions.
All right. Thanks, Nick, for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Coming up, Italian cooking. It's more than just pasta.
We'll talk with
Domenica Marchetti about her fifth cookbook, The Glorious Vegetables of Italy. Stay tuned. That's ahead.